Welcome everyone to the next episode of Engineer Your Career. On the show today, we have the extraordinary Meha Chiraya. Ever since I've known Meha, I've always been impressed with her, and I think you will be too. Meha is passionate about improving access to healthcare, both in the US and internationally. Currently, she's in the domestic space, working in marketing at a large biotech, where she focuses on developing strategy and executing marketing tactics across the country. Previously, she worked in global health consulting at Accenture Development Partnerships, ADP, a corporate social enterprise that brings Accenture's consulting expertise to drive innovation in international developments. Meha's passion for making a difference in healthcare was sparked as an undergraduate at the University of Michigan, where she held internships in India and Honduras, working in health management for an NGO and volunteering as a student biomechanical engineer at an urban hospital. She recently completed her part-time MBA at UCLA Anderson with a specialization in marketing and is a mom to a toddler and a newborn. Originally from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, today Meha resides with her husband and kids outside of Los Angeles. To start things off, Meha wanted to let everyone know that
my views are my own and not my employer's.
So with that said, Meha, welcome to EYC.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Engineer Your Career. I'm Brennan Timrak, and as always, I'm joined with Troy Bauman. Troy,
yes.
How you doing?
Dude. Awesome, man. It's Saturday. It's sunshiny. I feel like I can see summer's coming, so I'm doing really good. How have you been, man? What have you been up to?
I'm about the same. It's a sunny day. It is a Saturday. We normally record these on the weekdays, so having a weekend recording is nice. So yeah, I'm just like relaxing. I'm not rushing to get anything done. Just hanging out, ready to have an awesome conversation today.
Dude, that's awesome. How are things at work?
You know, I'm keeping busy enough. Had a lot of early mornings to accommodate for some testing time. So nothing quite like an early morning when I'm getting in a vehicle at like negative 10 Celsius. It's like 14F for those in the US system there. So early mornings to be cold, but getting to do some cool stuff. So that's always nice.
The joys of testing. Not only getting in at 4 a.m., but you also get to do it at 14 degrees.
Yeah. And then other days, you know, it'll be like 120 degrees. So, you know, you get to do a little bit of everything.
Sweat and freeze.
You got to make sure it works. I want to make sure that people's cars work and don't break on them, because that would be bad.
Yeah. So when you get in your car and it's freezing cold in the morning, just know that there's people like Brennan that sat in test chambers at that or much colder temperatures just to make sure when your car starts or when you try to start your car that it actually does start.
Exactly. Exactly. So but yeah, what about you, man? PhD, you're getting along.
Dude, I know it's getting close. So I'm doing that jury study. So I'm to the point now where the study is ready and stakeholders have listened to it and everyone's good to execute. So now I got to advertise. Now I'm to the point where I got to actually start recruiting people and getting them in and having them go through the jury study so then I can process the data, which actually ties well to our guest today. So on the show, Meha Chiraya. Meha, welcome. So glad you're here.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and it fits so well, actually. I didn't just think about this in terms of my PhD. Like I'm coming to the point where I now need to market and I need to put on a different cap as I approach this part of my PhD. And so I think it fits well because as we're going to find out in a second, I think Meha is going to be the knowledge piece that I need in this next step. So
I'll do my best, Troy.
Yes. So that everyone can kind of get up to speed to where I know you are. Can you maybe give us your origin story? How did you get to be the marketeer you are today?
Yeah, Troy and Brennan. So today I am a marketer. I work at a biotech right outside of LA. And where I started, though, I'd like to say my origins, if you ask me my origin story, started in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So born and raised there. My parents both work at Michigan Tech University. And I think, you know, and I ultimately studied biomedical engineering in undergrad, but I think being in a community of an academic community, right, where it's a small town and everyone's some way associated with tech, your friends, their parents work at tech, you kind of knew that, okay, you got to go study and study something. Study something hard, right? So, and I think because growing up at tech, that also everyone assumed I would go there. Even my parents are like, yeah, of course. I mean, why not? But you guys think about it. If you went to school where your parents roam the campus every day and you bump into them, I mean, that's not exactly the ideal college experience, right? So ultimately, I went downstate to Ann Arbor. I went to the University of Michigan and studied biomedical engineering. And within undergrad, though, is kind of when I had a shift meaning what is it that I actually want to do with my career is it the technical side? Is it a traditional, more traditional engineering job? Or is there something else that's sparking a light in me? And I think the transformational moment came during the summer after my sophomore year in undergrad. So I had this opportunity to volunteer abroad on this program called Engineering World Health. And we went down to Central America for a couple months. So there's a group of students from across the country, all biomedical engineering undergrads. And we went to Costa Rica for a month to get trained on how to fix medical equipment, right? Donated medical equipment. And then in the second month, we're all placed in different parts of Central America, assigned to different hospitals. And the objective was that as volunteer engineers, we would really be assisting the local medical technicians at these hospitals and how to fix the equipment, right? So really hands-on experience, really exchange of ideas and knowledge. And also at the same time, it was great because we got exposed to the Spanish language and became fluent in Spanish, etc. But really, guys, it was that summer when I realized that I felt most fulfilled when I was engaging in Spanish across different departments of that hospital, not just the technical department fixing equipment, and trying to understand the other problem that the hospital had and what problem they're trying to solve. And also figure out, is there a way for me as a volunteer engineer to help them? Right. So kind of that problem solving that came through communication, through understanding the needs of others, and the problems weren't necessarily even related to medical equipment, right? One of the wards said, hey, we really need to increase more public health awareness. So could you help us figure out how to, kind of going back to the marketing thing, can you help us figure out how to create some marketing messages or do a skit for women that are in this waiting room and teach them about how to take care of yourself when you're pregnant, right? No smoking, eating healthy, et cetera. So that was very unique for me that I thought, okay, you know, my first exposure to a developing country hospital, you know, they need good medical equipment, but also other things that one could help them with. So I think after that is when I realized, okay, is there a career path that I can take that isn't engineering? And ultimately, what I ended up doing was going into consulting. So luckily for me at the University of Michigan, consulting companies did come and recruit to the engineering school, right? So I knew that, okay, this could be a potential career path. And after talking to a few folks and going through the recruiting process, I thought, okay, this could be exciting because here I am using my problem solving and analytical thinking skills that I've gained through my engineering curriculum, but I'm using it in a different way to help companies think about the problem in a different light. And that was really appealing to me, especially because I realized also in undergrad, you kind of, you know, discover yourself that I am an extrovert, right? And I like to really engage with people. So I was trying to formulate what my dream job could be. Ultimately, after graduating from Michigan with that degree in biomedical engineering, I started working at a company called Accenture. So Accenture, a large consulting firm. And the thing is, guys, I knew that despite not necessarily wanting to do a traditional engineering job, I knew I was passionate about healthcare. So I thought, okay, if I can go work for a company that's making a difference in the business side of healthcare, then let's see what happens. And so at Accenture, I was very fortunate to work on projects that are all in the healthcare realm. I worked for a payer company. I worked for a hospital. And one of the projects I spent a lot of time on, this is back in around the 2012 timeframe, is working with a hospital to implement electronic medical records. Right? So you think about the healthcare system today, but especially about 10 years ago, everything was still on paper. So moving from paper to the computer to making everything electronic. So being part of that shift in the healthcare system while I was playing a smaller role, just working for one client and implementing the system there, but I felt like I was part of something bigger. I was making a difference in healthcare and the whole nation by working on and understanding the process of implementing electronic medical records. So really love that. Again, this is thinking about my story. That's about 3 years into my career now. So, but as I mentioned earlier, in undergrad, I spent that time abroad, and there's still this fire in me that, okay, I'm doing great work in this country, but can I also think about how I can make a difference in healthcare internationally? So within Accenture, there's a corporate social enterprise, a small group within Accenture called Accenture Development Partnerships that actually works for clients that are international, all around the world. And I was fortunate to become part of the global health team there. And I truly attribute it to the fact that I went out of my comfort zone in undergrad and spent the summer abroad after my sophomore year. Actually, after my junior year also, I spent time working for a nonprofit in rural India. So because I decided to explore what else is out there instead of a traditional internship, I think that really helped shape me and also gave me the opportunity to work on cool projects just within a few years of my career. One of my favorite projects at Accenture was working in Colombia for the World Diabetes Foundation and Novo Nordisk, a pharma company. And essentially, they're running this program on gestational diabetes. And they brought Accenture in to assess, is this program successful? Is the are women in these communities getting educated on how to take care of themselves prevent the occurrence of gestational diabetes? And what is the role of different stakeholders in a community to make this type of program successful? And we made some recommendations on how to expand this program to other parts of the country or other parts of the world. So really loved that experience. And fast forwarding though now, because when one thinks about their career, you're fortunate, I think, at a certain point that you're able to be single-minded about it. Okay, I'm going to figure out what's best for me, what fulfills me. But after a certain point, if you decide to get married or decide to start a family, right, then you have to figure out how can you balance your career aspirations with your partner, with your family. So ultimately, at this time, I was living on the East Coast in Philadelphia and New York. And then I got married and then my husband got a job out here right outside of LA. So at that point, I thought, okay, maybe instead of the consulting world where I'm actually always on the road, right, either locally or domestically or internationally, maybe start to take another shift and see where has my background that has shaped me so far from my engineering undergrad, from my consulting skills, wanting to stay in the healthcare industry, what's next? So that's where I ended up to where I am today, working in marketing at a biotech, where I still feel like I'm able to have an impact in healthcare using the skills that I've built so far, but it's just kind of a different way than maybe a few years ago. And I think that's okay because you have to keep evolving with the journey of life.
I see. Yeah. So maybe let's just tee this up a little bit, this decision to move west. How many years out of undergrad were you?
4 years out of undergrad.
Gotcha. So you're 4 years out of undergrad. You've had these great experiences internationally during undergrad, and you go and you're doing consulting and you're getting great exposure. So you're really starting to see the elements of the world that you really want to interact with. And then as happens, right, life comes in and you have more things that you want to be passionate and care about, like your family and other things too. And so then how did you start to look at that or look for those jobs then? I mean, were you knew kind of what you wanted to do, but it still didn't sound like you knew how to say, are there jobs at X company? What did that process look a little bit like?
Yeah. So when he first moved out here, I was fortunate to still be able to actually work for Accenture for another couple of years because they happen to have an office in LA and working remotely, traveling a bit sometimes to New York where my old team was. And I think, you know, now this is fast forward to 6 years out of undergrad is when I was like, okay, maybe settling down a bit more. I mean, I'm married, but maybe start to think about having a family. So I think I was fortunate, Troy and Brennan, that we're in an area where we are next to a larger city where there are a lot of companies. Right? Coming in to find what I wanted to do, I knew that I had some criteria, right? Work that will be fulfilling again in the healthcare space, but also I wanted to be in a role where I feel like I can see the results of what I do and the direct results. And what I mean by that is when you're in consulting, you make recommendations, they go to a client or you come up with a white paper, you're not actually accountable for implementing those results, right? Or those recommendations. So I wanted to be in a place where I'm also responsible, not just for strategy, but also for execution. And that's where this marketing work came up in this biotech company.
What was that like for you? You got started in this because it was something that you had experience in your undergrad and that you really wanted to do. And then you said that companies were recruiting at University of Michigan, looking for people to fill these roles. And you had the engineering degree to start off with. What has that been like in the process of moving different roles, saying, you know, I have an engineering degree, this is what I know. I don't have necessarily a marketing role. I don't have necessarily a business degree. Initially, what was that like for you? Did you find that to be extremely helpful, having an engineering degree? Or was it a little bit you had to prove, I have the degree, but here's all the experiences that make me qualified for something that doesn't have engineer in the title?
That's a great question, Brennan. So I will say to everyone who's listening, an engineering degree gives you so much street cred. Right? Everyone. And that's especially true when you start working in a place that's not full of engineers. And the people are like, wow, you studied engineering in undergrad? Damn, you must be smart. Right? So that helps. And then on the another angle to that is, because I want to do something that's non-traditional engineering, as you've highlighted, I also had to demonstrate skills outside of my technical skills, right? My ability to communicate, to collaborate, to influence and negotiate, to manage. And I think the time in undergrad, what helped me with that, it was the fact that I took on leadership roles within student organizations. That absolutely helped. In undergrad, I was president of the Society of Women Engineers. And at Michigan, it's actually one of the largest student groups, or it was at that time, on the engineering campus. And as president of SWE, Society of Women Engineers, we did a lot when it came to making an impact within the campus and also within the broader community. And highlighting some of my experiences and the challenges and the work that I was able to come up with during my interview as a consulting company, I recall absolutely helped, because I was able to show, again, the thinking critically, strategic problem-solving skills, but also my ability to communicate and work in a team and get things done.
That's really interesting, May. I think one element that is really interesting to me is that you end up, I think, also getting your master's in business. And it sounds like that was maybe another way for you to hone in on those other additional skills that maybe you needed. Is that correct? Or maybe can you talk a little bit about the decision process to then get that MBA?
Troy, thanks for reminding me about my MBA. Yeah, so that I just graduated actually last June. So sometimes I forget that I have that under my belt. So that's a great question. I ended up deciding to do a part-time MBA I started actually the same year that I started working at this biotech in marketing. And the reason was twofold. First, as we talked about, being an engineer, I had a solid foundation of skills, but I also wanted to demonstrate that I had the theoretical knowledge to understand different aspects of a company, of a business, how it works, especially when I knew I wanted to move up in management on the kind of the commercial side of the organization of any industry. And doing an MBA part-time, I'll speak to that for a second, really helped, because I knew that I wasn't doing a career shift. I knew I wanted to stay in the biotech industry and marketing, but I also knew that I wanted to supplement my skills, and what I learned in school at night, I could take to work the next day, which I think is extremely valuable when you think about doing a master's, if you have the capacity or the ability to study while you're working is really helpful. And today, so now that I graduated last year, the investment, I think, in the part-time MBA is also going to be a long-term investment, because I'll be able to put the pieces together of what makes a company successful as I move forward in my career.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think your story of how and why you got your MBA is, it's really illustrative. And honestly, we have people on this podcast that are using the master's degree as a tool to achieve something. And I think you did a great job. And I think it's an illustrative example for those who are listening of, get your master's if you're using it as a tool. Like, what are you trying to do? So if you're trying to build your technical skills, that's great. Or there was episode, I think, 3, Caitlin on our show. She got her master's because she wanted to make a job change. And so she needed new technical information. But the MBA can also be, as we saw in our previous episode, you can also just use it to build the network. Kevin in the last episode did that really, really well. And so I think the MBA can be a lot of different things. And it sounds like, another great example of you using it as the tool to achieve an objective. And that really being the point, I guess what I'm trying to say for those who are listening, it's, if you're going to get a master's degree, why? Before you start, what are you trying to gain from that, and how will that help you? And If you can answer that question and it's going to be the tool to make that change, perfect. But don't just get it to get it type of situation. So that's great. And I loved very much the second part of your, like the part-time, because that's something that a lot of people struggle with too. It's like, well, maybe I know I want the tool of the MBA, but how can I achieve it? And things like, you know, the part-time MBA, the weekend MBA, and these other options have come up in the MBA realm to allow for that. Did you find that it worked as good as you hoped? Yeah, I guess I don't even really know how to ask that. But the idea of, you know, before you got your MBA, you're like, okay, I'm going to do this part-time MBA because it's going to help in these ways. Can you talk maybe a little bit about your reflection on that? Was that accurate?
Yeah, so I will also emphasize that I did part-time because I knew that I didn't want a career change completely, right? And I do recommend that if folks want to go, if you are, say, in a traditional engineering role, and if you want to make that shift from engineering to marketing, you might, it is a leap, right? It is a leap. And I think doing an MBA, and if you decide to do a full-time MBA to make a sort of leap like that, it is actually much smoother, because then I feel, when you're doing a full-time MBA, my understanding of it is that there's a lot of heavy emphasis on recruiting, and companies come to you, and then you're able to have a more of a way to pitch yourself in different roles with companies. When you're doing a part-time MBA, it is more of a hustle, of a self-driven hustle, right? So because you have to figure out where to invest your time if you're working and you're studying and you're looking for new jobs. I mean, looking for new jobs is a job in itself almost, right? Those that have done it, we can understand. So that's how you have to, as we've talked about, as Troy, you're emphasizing, you have to be really clear that if you're doing a part-time MBA, it could be just supplementing what you're currently doing and thinking about more of a long-term investment versus an immediate shift tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that's a great example of using that as to build the technical knowledge, but still kind of stay in your path. Whereas on the previous episode, for those who are listening, Kevin used it the exact other way. He was an engineer for 12 years, and then he got the MBA, went full-time, and then basically transitioned, used that as the transition out of engineering into the business world. And I think it's excellent. I think it allows, you know, it can be that change catalyst if you want, but it's good to be intentful about it and have the plan before you start it. So that's great.
So Meha, can you maybe explain to those of us who are not as well versed in the business realm side of things, what exactly someone does in marketing? I think a lot of people, including myself, if they don't know someone, they can easily confuse marketing with advertising. And I know now that just because you're in marketing, that does not mean the same thing. So like, lay out, like, what are some of the things you do in your job that are part of that marketing umbrella?
Specifically, actually, Brennan, I'll speak to marketing in this pharma/biotech world, because it's actually a bit unique in this space. So the way that the pharmaceutical industry or biotech industry works is that our goal is to educate physicians about new or existing products so that when they prescribe medicines to patients, they're informed about all the options out there. And you think about how a physician receives information, right? Some, if they go to conferences, then maybe they'll hear about new drugs or existing therapies there, or they might be do some research online. But one way that has been effective over the past many years is education through sales reps. So sales reps visit doctors at their offices or at their clinics, and whenever they have a break, then they have a chance to just, you know, detail them on what's new, if there's any new information, any new data, or what's going on with a drug or a therapy. And so my role in marketing for biotech is to come up with the marketing information to educate the doctors via the sales reps. And marketing is essentially communication. Figure out how to communicate in a simplified way to reach your target audience. And in this case, my target audience is the physicians. So looking at any new information or data that's there, figuring out how to put it in a simplified way that will be communicated to the doctors through the sales force is essentially what I do on a daily basis.
I think another way that I like to think about marketing is, instead of the word marketer, it's almost like communicator, information communicator.
Yes.
And in a lot of ways, you know, you can imagine the situation that you just kind of described where, okay, there's a person and there's their physician, and the physician has, you know, who knows, they've been practicing for however long, they have the information that they have, and they only have so much time to find new information. But there's maybe a thing that they prescribe every day that maybe there's a better alternative. You know, that communicator's got to come in and say, "Hi, physician, I know you're really, really busy. So here's a little bit of time. Here is technical data that you understand that's going to help you prescribe the best thing for your patients, which is really what the physicians want to do, right? I mean, they're in the spot where they're trying to do the best they can. And so if there is a legitimate alternative to what they're prescribing that would be better, they would like to know about it. But you have to communicate that to them. You know, you have to kind of meet them where they are. I have this with my daughter where it's like, when I'm trying to communicate to her, I have to meet her where she is technically and, you know, and I guess technically and socially, like where I think she is socially developed and technically developed. And in some ways, you know, you're doing that obviously on the higher technical end of like, okay, I have to meet them where they are socially in terms of how busy they are and what their time constraints are. But I also have to meet them technically in that when I present them data and then they ask technical questions back, I need to be able to communicate with them so that you can be a good communicator so that they can do the best for their patients. And I think that's just an important way to think about marketing is that you're trying to communicate information. And if you're going to be a good marketer or communicator, you have to be able to meet that person where they are.
You got this, Troy. You can definitely market you for this PhD now. That's exactly
So there we go. Step one, meet my jurors where they are. They're college students. So I need to I'm going to go to the bar. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. We've deduced that.
Recruit I would say bar. That like the skill of communication though, obviously Meha, it's like the number one thing in your job, but really for anyone in, I would say most careers, but if keeping this in the engineering realm, in engineering, like that's super important because even though in school we have to do these presentations or whatever and get graded and people try to teach us things, in the workplace, like I've had to sit through so many presentations that were not tailored to the audience, even though the audience is as technical. It's either too much information, too little information, unclear pictures and graphs. And the reason we're sharing information at all is either to convince someone that we need to do something or to prove that we have done everything correctly or in a certain way. So I think this is like, obviously for you, really important trying to get correct and accurate information out to doctors, but really to anyone in engineering or outside, like having the right communication, understanding who your audience is, tailoring things to it, and really just practicing that the more and more you can, the more you'll get better at it. I don't know if you have found any ways that you really have helped you improve or get better at it or techniques that you found.
Yeah, I mean, it really does start, and I'm glad that we're discussing this right now, guys. It really does start in undergrad, because when you think about it, outside of the class presentations, like you have nothing to lose when you kind of get yourself out there to maybe in different student groups. And if there's a way to, you know, organize an event or get in front of a room and talk about a topic or even bring in a guest speaker, but you introduce that guest speaker, like any way to be in front of a room to help communicate or even in a student organization, advocating for your own ideas, that itself is a skill to hone as early as possible because, yeah, as we're discussing, it'll serve you super well in whatever career you're pursuing in your daily life. That art of sharing your perspective and getting others to perhaps follow your perspective, right? Or even you figure out how to adjust your own views and building consensus around an idea and getting people to follow it is applicable everywhere.
Yeah. And I think it continues to be a common theme of this podcast. I mean, I'm just off the top of my head thinking back to Justin in episode 7, how he said being involved in housing and res life gave him skills to be successful at Caterpillar. Eric in episode 5, how he did all those extra programming assignments that were part of bigger teams that helped him become a better programmer at YouTube. Like these outside of class extracurriculars are so powerful in honing skills that you need in real life work. And the technical side is good and learning how to be a critical thinker. Those are very powerful things from an undergraduate degree. But by getting yourself involved in more than just classes, you learn a lot of other skills that you also really need. Like, I mean, if you're an engineer right now and you're sitting at your desk and you think that you don't need to communicate or market your ideas to someone, like, what are you doing when you present to your manager? You're essentially trying to convince them of something. Yeah, they're not somebody who's going to buy something from you, but you have some hypothesis or some data that you're trying to communicate to someone. And you need to do that as effectively as possible. And it's there for everyone, those skills. And I just think another great example in your case here, Meha, it's just more specifically titled that way. I guess as a follow-up though, is everyone who's kind of doing what you're doing, do they all have bachelor's degrees in engineering, or do you need to have a bachelor's degree in engineering to do what you're doing?
I would say that I'm unique that with my title, there's very few others that might have the engineering degree. But I also have to say, and again, these views are my own, that I feel that this is giving me an advantage to accelerate perhaps a bit more in my career versus someone that may have a degree that's not in engineering in undergrad. And what I mean by that is because I have the ability, I really feel because of my background, to be able to connect the dots, to be able to put the pieces of a puzzle together in the workspace. And when you can do that, plus you have the ability to communicate, like that's just gold, you know? And when people start to see that, then they see, okay, this person has a lot to offer. Let's give her some more stretch roles or challenging assignments. Let's see what she can do with this. And the more that you can do that, if the goal is to rise up the corporate ladder, then then that engineering background was truly going to help.
Sure. So tying this back to your time at Accenture, Meha, can you tell me a little bit about what your day-to-day life was like there? You know, if someone's sitting down in that chair, what are you spending like your time on? You know, what percentage of time are you in meetings, that type of thing?
Yeah. So I think what's interesting about the consulting life is that each project that you work on is very different, but I think all of them have similar themes. So one of them, especially say if you're in consulting in the early stages of your career, maybe, you know, between a year out to 5 years out from undergrad, a lot of it is understanding the needs of the client, figuring out what problem you're trying to solve, and then doing research, you can say secondary research as well as primary research, to solve that problem. So a specific example, when I was in Colombia working on the project with the World Diabetes Foundation on gestational diabetes, so the secondary research component was understanding diabetes itself, right? Understanding its prevalence, understanding how what the management and care is like for diabetes, and then also understanding the Colombian healthcare system, the network there. The primary research component was going out and engaging with different stakeholders who are all part of this program to understand their perspective of what success looks like and what are the challenges that they face in making this program successful. And then after that, both the secondary and primary research, you come back and you reflect on your findings. You distill it down. And to be technical, I mean, a lot of the work is simply, you know, Microsoft Word and PowerPoint, right? When you're doing this thinking and analyzing and writing. And then you come up with key recommendations and you present those recommendations back to your client. And that's in the form of PowerPoint. So a lot of the work in consulting is a combination of thinking and talking, frankly, and then reflecting, writing a recommendation, then presenting it back.
Got it. So a lot of the time that you're spending is maybe not as in-depth technically as someone who does engineering might be used to, but it's a lot of compiling all this information, getting answers that you need, and then presenting it in a way to, hey, here's a solution, or here's an example, something. I think that's interesting because we often get lost in the details in a lot of things we work on, and we really dive in and we fail to really come up and realize how do we put this together and put it into something that is useful. So I think it's good to always remember, hey, like there's other sides of this, of how we package it, how we put it together, how we create something that in your case is going to be useful to help a project that has a real impact in the world. And so I want to follow up a little bit on that, is that when you were at Accenture, you were part of their corporate social enterprise. I don't know if that's a division or project or what you call that. But so you were doing projects that had real impacts in people in other countries in the international development space. I think there are a lot of projects that students do in college that are kind of focused on going to other countries, working on projects to help someone like a hospital like you did when you were doing that in undergrad. But then transitioning that into professional role, I think it's easy when you're young to be like, hey, I want to go out and do projects that really make a big impact. But when graduation day comes, it's I also need to get a job and start paying off my student debt. You worked in one company that allowed you to do that. What does that space look like? What opportunities are there out there for people who want to do something that can have kind of a real meaningful impact on people's lives directly who need it?
Yeah, I love this question because when I think of my career trajectory also, you know, in undergrad, I began both the summers after sophomore year, after junior year, I worked and volunteered. I had a grant the second time, but, you know, worked internationally. And after that, I realized that it's really important, again, to make money, but also if you think about long-term career, to figure out what success looks like in here in the US in terms of how we work, how companies operate, whether engineering companies, consulting companies, because since there's so much business here, right, obviously we are all doing something really well. I think it's important to know what drives that so that you can take it to other places around the world. So that's why I decided to, right after undergrad, part of it, I mean, of course, again, financially, but also working in the domestic space so that I could take those learnings internationally. And that's how it was about 4 years, 3 to 4 years out of undergrad is when I went back to work internationally. And now, real quick, when I think about me working in marketing in the US in a biotech, I also work in a company that is global, and I think about, okay, for the next few years, I can continue to work here in the US, but then can I position myself for a global role and take the learnings about how business operates in the US and take that to the rest of the world? So why I'm saying that is because as if someone, if listeners here want to think about a global career, I would, and at the same time are juggling the financial aspect about, okay, how do I pay off my debt, et cetera. Be patient, right? I would say be patient and find a role here that in this country that can expose you to a lot of different skill sets that you build. But at the same time, in an ideal situation, you'll also be working in a company that has a global presence. Consider that. And then figure out if you can move to an expat role or expat position within a few years so you can go work in a different country and figure out how to make an impact there.
What are some of those like other roles that you've seen when you were working on these projects? You were obviously interacting with other people who did lots of different parts of it. What are some of those roles that you've seen that people from the United States or from American colleges have gone out and done?
So I'll speak to a consulting company such as Accenture, and then actually at the same time, my current employer. So a global company, they can have offices all around the world. And what that means is, say you have an office in New York and you have an office in Zurich in Switzerland, but it just means that the work that you do, say in Zurich, will be focused on more local projects, local consulting clients, or maybe clients like across Europe. So what's interesting is that the work could be similar in consulting, but just in a different geography. I think when it comes to a manufacturing company, right, such as Amgen, when you have a global presence, then you think about how you, and especially if say you work on the marketing side, you focus on marketing and selling drugs in the US, and then you can take those learnings. But what's interesting, guys, right, about internationally is that each country has its own local market, has its own way of operating, its own way of doing things, its own customers. So while there are skills that are replicable, whenever you work in a different setting, you need to make sure you understand that local environment so you can build upon your skills from the US and adjust that to the country that you're now working in.
I think it's good for people to kind of outline a little bit about maybe what they mean internationally. You know, Brendan, I hear what you talk about, and I think, is that person wanting to work for like a non-governmental organization, NGO? Are they trying to like be down in like literally like the grassroots, trying to like help individual people? But I think you can also approach it from a different level of, can I still work for a big multinational and still help a lot of people while working abroad? And I think there's different ways to go about that. And Maya, what I took away from what you said that I think is really important is this idea of, you can still work for that big company. And I think if you start in your culture, either the US or whatever country you're in, you start and you get comfortable working in the corporate world there, there's a lot of multinationals that have other offices that you can go to and then continue to grow and help people there as well. So maybe it's this idea of, well, if you're interested in working internationally, you know, starting domestic is going to help you because it helps build that foundation. And honestly, in my experience, there's a lot of companies that want people to go abroad if they're on a path of trying to move up the ladder. And, you know, it's good to get international experience if you're part of a multinational company, if you want to move up. And so it can actually be a huge win-win if you are able to, you know, work for 5-ish years in the US and then go abroad and then work for a few years there. Like, that's going to be a good thing for you if you're interested, but also a good thing for the company because a lot of companies are looking for people to do that. I think that's a little bit different of the scale, though, than if you're like trying to work for the Peace Corps or, you know, you're trying to like go into a small community and help. I think that's a little bit different of a situation.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. Yes, good.
Okay, Maya. So now you're at the point, you know, you just finished your MBA. Congratulations. You know, you're working in marketing at a biotech. I'm curious as to how you see your future. Are you hoping to continue to do more technical marketing? Or I guess, what are your options for the path forward?
Yeah, so when I think about my future, so now I'm 10 years into my career, I had some international experience, I've had some local experiences. And I think for those listeners that, you know, have a family or at some point want to have a, or starting a family, the fact that I have two kids under three, right? I have a 2-year-old and a 4-month-old now. What that means is I'm not necessarily trying to slow down in any way, right? I mean, if someone does, that's fine. But I'm just thinking about pivoting the focus of my career, because up till now I thought, okay, age 31 at this point, let's go back and do something internationally. Like I want to go work in Europe, right? My husband and I are aligned on that. But now with two young kids and with daycare really accessible, you have to make certain life choices based on where you're at. So with that, I feel then in the near term, I'll continue to work in a marketing role or maybe even a sales role in the US, and then think going forward if I can become an executive internationally within the pharma or biotech space, because I do feel passionate about healthcare. I do feel that my skill set can make a difference in healthcare. So now it's just figuring out the pace of that in my career trajectory.
I think that's something, and it is, it's something that everyone struggles with. I'm going to say struggle, but I mean, thinks through like this process of how do you take your individual self and apply that to the future? And it's something I've been thinking about recently, this idea of like, as an individual, right, we all go from high school through college and we do these things that allows us to get to where we are, and we're that person. But that situation changes when you get married. It changes when, you know, you move closer to family and you're spending more time with family. It definitely right. changes when you have kids. It changes when you get a dog. It changes when you get cats. like you are no longer you as the individual.
Right.
And you as the individual makes different choices than you as part of a community. And that's just how life works. And we all have to kind of figure out what that means. And, you know, I think that's just different for each person. And it's kind of, it sounds like that's very much for you, you know, and you do what I think is good and what you're good at. You communicate with the stakeholders in your community, and you develop a plan. And that's, you know, that's everyone, right? That's your husband, but that's also your people at work. And I think that's from what I can tell, what a lot of people who do it and are happy with how they do it, it's this idea of I'm going to communicate well, and we're going to basically make the best decision for the community. And so I'm glad to hear that, you know, you're coming to a good place with that, because honestly, it's something that I'm thinking about too. And I think it's something that right. a lot of people who are listening are thinking about, is how do I make decisions when it's not just me, right? And I think that's important to think through when you're making those decisions.
Yeah. And ultimately, and just to keep getting philosophical for a second, it's like, what is the legacy that I want to have on this earth, you know? And the fact that I feel fortunate that I'm able to put in a lot into my career so far, and now, okay, but I also want to make sure like I have an impact on, you know, my kids growing up. So it's like always, I think it's an evolution, like figuring out what that balance looks like in terms of where you're spending your time. And it really boils down to also what your values are in terms of where you want to have that impact.
Right. I agree. And I think, you know, for me, just in my experience, you know, it's even once you have the values you think set, it's then how you execute on those. And I think that can be a real challenge, just because you get so ingrained as your individual, right? If you work to where you are now, right, it's all the things that you've done in the past that have built on and give positive reinforcement to where you are now, right? Like if you worked late at work and that gave you praise, like you were rewarded for that. And so that builds it in value. And so that means for the future in your mind, right, if you want to be successful, you have to keep doing what you did in the past. You have to keep working late. You have to keep doing these things subconsciously in order to be successful in the future. But when you're making decisions that are not just you, you can't do that.
Yes.
You have to become a new person, and you have to make decisions to be for the community moving forward. And that's really hard. I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, even if you have the values you think it's rock solid in your mind, executing on that is still no small task. And I think for me, it largely has to do with the reinforcement that I've had that got me to where I am today. And it's like, well, I've been happy and successful, quote unquote, under my own definitions to get me to where I am today doing this. And now I have to do something completely different. How am I going to be successful? I can't guarantee that. I can only tell you that what I've done in the past got me to be successful. I can't tell you that changing that is going to make me be successful. So how do you balance that? It's difficult. So, but it's something that people, I think, need to think through. And I think it sounds like, Meha, you're being a rock star and thinking through it and talking through it. And that's what you got to do.
Exactly. Thanks for that.
Yeah. So I think one other thing that I want to touch, for those who are interested in, you know, doing technical marketing or technical communicating, I imagine that can be most anywhere. Is there key geographic regions for this type of work, or can you pretty much do it anywhere?
Honestly, I would say that it's probably wherever the company that you want to work for is headquartered, right? Because when you think about a role such as marketing, you really have to understand what happens at all parts of the organization. When you're at headquarters, that means that there's a lot of where business decisions are made. And it's important for marketing to be tied into the overall business. So in terms of geography, yeah, I think it's just wherever the company that you want to be is where it's located.
So Maya, thinking back to your undergrad days, what do you think your education didn't teach you that you wished you would have learned? Or what, if you could talk to yourself back in undergrad, what would be some of the things that you would suggest trying to learn back then that you wish you would have known?
Yeah. What kind of, you know, one of the themes of our conversation, guys, here today is getting exposed to the business side of things early on, regardless of what path within engineering you're going to pursue, right? Or slightly outside of engineering. So when I think about undergrad, I feel fortunate that I was at a university where there was lots of opportunities to take classes outside of just the engineering school. But see, there's one thing to have the opportunity. There's another thing to actually take that opportunity, right? And one thing that I would have done differently, perhaps, if I had known, if I had had some sort of direction or mentorship or guidance, is actually with my electives, taking more courses in business. And that's not to say that, you know, that I don't feel like I'm necessarily a good place. Like, again, I just did my MBA, et cetera. But having more exposure to the business side of things, even if it's a course in finance, right? Or even if it's a course in accounting, let's say, but taking even a couple of business courses in undergrad can help anyone know how your work fits into the bigger picture of a company. Because too often I feel like we're siloed in the divisions that we work in, again, whether it's in a technical side, whether it's even in marketing. And to bridge the silos, it's important to be able to speak each other's language. So again, in undergrad, if you take, whether it's finance, if you take an operations class, if you take something that helps you see how a company functions and is successful, many of us work in a corporation. So understanding how a corporation actually functions as early on as possible can help you feel more connected to the bigger picture of your work and your career. So that's what I would have done differently, is gotten myself more exposure to the business side of things in my elective classes.
That's excellent advice. You know, I think a lot of people can benefit from that, this idea of getting that additional business exposure. I think there's a lot of engineers that are really hesitant in that. They hear that and they're, the business side doesn't matter. I don't even necessarily know, or they just don't have an interest. And I guess, to be fair, like, that's fine too. Like, if you know you don't have an interest in the business side, that's okay. Just know that you're not going to have a good insight into the big picture. And so, you know, don't get frustrated when you see the CEO make this change or your manager or director do this change, because they're trying to think of the big picture. And, you know, if you want to close your eyes to the big picture, that's fine, because you just want to be technical all the time. But just be careful not to get frustrated by big picture changes, because there's people trying to think about, you know, the bigger group. I just see that, you know, I see technical people get frustrated by, oh, the manager's doing this or the manager's doing this. But if I put my business hat on, it's like, well, they're trying to do this for the organization. They're trying to do this for the community. And it's your almost unwillingness to get exposed to that that's causing your frustration. And again, I have no issue with people wanting to just be purely technical, but I think you need to understand what you're limited in understanding when you do that. Well, I think that gets us pretty much close to an hour. Maya, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, this was fun, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been great. Is there any last kind of parting words you want to share with anyone listening?
Yeah, I would say, you know, to all those out there that love engineering, but also want a non-traditional engineering path, I mean, know that as an engineer, you have the ability to problem solve and to think critically. And to me, from my perspective, that is a foundation to be successful in literally anything you want to do. And it's just that, make sure that you're also tapping into the communication side of your strengths or your personality, and figure out if you want to make a sort of career shift, or you're coming out of undergrad and you want to do something non-traditional, figure out how to combine that ability to think critically and problem solve with your communication, your collaboration ability, and boom, you're gold. You'll be set.
That's awesome. And I think rumor has it, Maya, you're doing your own podcast as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the 906 and what you're up to?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. So a thing about the discussion we were just having, right, about how we're figuring out our values in our life and how we're evolving into figuring out what success looks like for us. So that's really the theme of the conversation on the podcast that I have with my co-host, Architha. It's called the 906. It's, you know, because of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, the community where our friendship was formed. And it's really where we share the stories of extraordinary women in our own communities who are defining success on their own terms. Because too often we think about how to get to the top of the corporate ladder, and maybe that's a traditional definition of success, but what about those that are on their own journeys? How can we share that and how can we celebrate that? So that's our goal with the podcast.
That's so awesome. Yeah, I think it's so critically important for individuals to define success for themselves. And I think mentors help with that. And just listening to the experience of others is another great way to do that. So that sounds like a really fantastic thing for the community. How I guess, what do we search? What website do we go to?
Yeah, thanks for asking. It's www.the906.com. And it's actually spelled out. So it's the906.com.
Got it. Awesome. Well, that sounds great. Definitely something for people listening to check out, especially if you're interested in kind of really what we only touched the tip of the iceberg on, in this idea of like setting values. And then once you've even set them, how do you actually implement them to achieve your own definition of success? It sounds like some great experiences there from solid people to experience how you do that.
Be sure to check out episode 8, where we interview Andrea Bauman and her experiences being an ER doctor while being a new mom.
Wow, oh, Andrea Bauman. Sounds amazing.
She is, as you know.
She is amazing. I fully am aware. Well, Maya, so great to have you. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know, you know, we only have so much time. And so to give us what you've given us, we really appreciate that. Yeah. And we hope you have a wonderful weekend and spend a lot of time with your family.
Thanks, guys. Take care. Have a good one.
There we go, man. Another great episode down. Awesome to hear from Maya and her story. I think different than the people before, which has been awesome. And I think great to be able to realize all the different things you can do with an engineering degree.
Yeah, definitely. You don't have to just like stick to what you've learned. And I think sometimes that can be hard. People get into engineering and they realize that maybe that exact area is not something they're interested in, but they can apply those skills to something else. And seeing stories of that can be really helpful, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's kind of one of the main takeaways for me from this episode, is this idea of the bachelor's degree can teach you critical thinking and analysis, and you can apply that to a lot of other situations, and that's of value to the business world. And, you know, in Meha's case, she's applying it to marketing and being able to communicate technically to physicians, and that's her ability there, and also analyze the situations. But I think you can apply that in a bunch of ways. Like, let's say you're a mechanical engineer and you don't like mechanical engineering. Well, you still know critical thinking. So maybe, you know, you just go get your master's in electrical engineering and you can kind of switch that way. You can, you know, use, or you could, you know, go into all kinds of different stuff. Like, I think that's really the cool part about the bachelor's degree. And I think it's an important thing to think about if you're going through getting a bachelor's degree in engineering now, or even if you have one, but you have this strong skill set of critical thinking and that can do anything.
Yeah. Definitely. I totally agree. I think the skills that I've learned, like, I apply to other areas of my life, whether it's home or something else. And not like explicitly, I don't sit down and go like, though this is a problem and I need to do this and this and this, but just being like, oh, I have a set of skills that can be used to approach a problem, or at least to be aware of different things or whatever else. And that can apply like by far anywhere in the job world. We talked a lot about communication this episode, and for me, that is just like, it's such a huge thing. I see it every day in my job, people who communicate well and people who do not. And I think it's something you always got to work on. Meha's, her advice about like really working on those skills when you're in undergrad, and there's a lot less to lose when doing that, whether that's in an extracurricular activity or in a class or in a club or something, just kind of working on those skills and practicing them and improving them. I think that's crazy important, because when you get out into the working world, everything you're going to do is going to have some form of consequence to it. And so you get a little bit, there's more of an impact when you get things wrong. So for me, communication, if anyone out there is still in school and still listening, work on those skills now. Don't just depend on your classes to teach it to you or the reports you write or something. Go out there and try to get as much experience as you can before it really starts to matter.
Right. And that communication experience isn't like, okay, I learned how to write a paper. Like, you took a communications class, and what do we do in that communication class? We learned how to write papers. And I think engineers get stuck in this like thought sometimes where it's like, oh, I don't need to learn how to write papers. Kind of missing the picture there if you're thinking that way, I think. Like it's not about learning how to write papers. It's learning about how to, what we talked about, meet someone where they are, understand how they can receive information, and then optimizing the communication path so that they understand what you're trying to tell them the best as possible. Sometimes in engineering, we just get stuck at this idea of like, I need to get to the answer. I need to make sure that the answer is correct, but it doesn't stop there. The answer then needs to be communicated to stakeholders. And that whole process is a skill you need to work on. Same way you work on the skill, what you're doing right now, where you work on taking the inputs and getting to an answer. You need to work on getting the answer and then communicating it to the stakeholders so they understand the answer and what the implications are of that answer. I think it's critically important, but I think some people lose sight on it or maybe just don't necessarily see the importance of it.
Definitely. Soft skills are definitely an important thing, even though we don't want them to be sometimes engineers. We just want to have technical problem solving. This is what I know. You know, here's the equation, whatever else. But soft skills, man, they're huge. They're huge in the workplace.
Yeah. And to your point, Brennan, in order to do that well, I think, you know, you need to understand yourself. Like you made the comment of like, it might be uncomfortable. And that to me is a reflection of self. It's like, you need to be able to understand that doing this might be uncomfortable to me because of my personality and I'm an introvert and I don't necessarily like to do this, but it's still something that needs to get done. And it's important to self-reflect on some of those things so that you don't have deficits that are causing, you know, issues essentially.
Yeah, definitely. Totally agree.
Man, so much theoretical on this one, buddy. We're getting, it's good.
I know. I like that. I know. Less technical, more higher level, more wider ranging. Yeah. I love it.
Philosophical, for sure.
Yeah.
Important to do. Well, all right, man. Enjoy your couple weeks. I'll talk to you soon.
You too. See ya.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Engineer Your Career with Troy Bauman and Brennan Timrak. For more information about the show, visit our website at eycpodcast.com. There you can find show notes for each episode and get in touch with Troy and I. If you or someone you know are an engineer with an interesting or even not so interesting career journey and would like to be on the show, go on the website, send us a short bio, and we may just invite you to come on and share your story. And finally, if you want to show your support, please rate, review, like, or subscribe to the show on your podcast player of choice.